strong statements about state sovereignty and superseding the local government in that area, which really doesn't stick in my craw very well. So I could live with some cosmetic changes that, at least as far as I know, don't really change the meaning of this paragraph. But then the other questions do come up, and they again go back to this local government interconnect with the corporation. One of them is, at what point does state-owned land fall under the planning and zoning and building code and subdivision regulations of the Mat-Su borough? And at what point does city-owned land, we were discussing earlier, when the CDC is going to transfer land to the city, at what point does that fall under the Mat-Su borough planning? And these are the kinds of questions that really concern me greatly. And you know, I'm pretty flexible about when it happens or so on, but I think we've got to set up a way in which it can happen, and I want that way to provide for dovetailing so that there's involvement by the Mat-Su borough before the transfer, so that it's a smooth transition. And those are the things that really concern me. I really am not terribly concerned about the plan being the plan for the capital city area, but I'm very, very reactive to the language about state sovereignty and superseding and so on.
Mr. Chairman, correct me if I'm wrong, Arliss or Chuck, but it seems to me that under the Capital Planning Commission's plan, that the land is given in title to the CDC, the whole 66,000 acres, and it's no longer state land at that point. So they do with it what they want, plan with it, use it, regulate it as they want. At such time that the CDC dissolves, that land is then turned over to the municipality. And that time of dissolving is still to be set by the committee.
The developed part goes to the municipality. The undeveloped land goes back to the state.
By recollection.
It's been a long time, not several years.
I don't believe that state land generally is subject to municipal zoning, although I do recall there's some consultation mechanism with regard to state land, but as such, I don't believe it's subject to zoning power.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Mr. Meekin.
Well, I'm wondering if I understand Lisa's point correctly. As I understand what you said, the problem is with the continuity of planning. If you're going to have certain different entities doing the planning at different points, when it's transferred from the CDC, if they have the planning zoning, then it goes to the municipality, or some of it goes back to the borough. There's an incongruity there, or at least a chance for one, and you're worried about how to make that transition without and have a dovetail so that you don't have the worst of all worlds, which is going in one direction for 5 or 10 years and then going in another direction because the other people have different kinds of rules.
That's correct. And in addition, I'm concerned that it happened as soon as possible. I don't want it to go for CDC to go on doing the whole planning and zoning enforcement for 20 years or even necessarily for 10 years. I think it's got to happen very soon, but you're correct.
Okay.
Just to point here, the borough in any of these plans would not get any land except perhaps that the schools are not the manager. The city would get it, the CDC would have it, the state.
It seems that the CDC's power appears to be exercised for a rational period of time, in the sense that while something's being developed, the CDC as the supervisor of this gigantic construction effort ought to have full responsibility. When the construction effort is completed is when it reverts to local zoning, which is exactly when the CDC ought to get out, when they're done doing their job, which is getting the thing built.
Well, then would you object to saying when a parcel of land when development has been completed or substantially completed on a parcel of land? So you're talking not only about the private land, but you're also talking about the land on which the Capitol building is built and the governor's mansion is built and all the other things.
Well, perhaps Billy can help me with what it can. A municipality, can a borough zone state facility?
Yes.
It does, as a matter of fact. You may remember the angry GEO controversy recently.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I'll have a proposal for this when we get through. What about 41? That was taken out anyway in the state affairs.
Mr. Chairman, the reason these definitions are taken out, if the terms are not used in the capital city portion except in the planning and zoning section, so of course you don't define terms you don't use. So when the planning and zoning section was taken out, these two sections automatically came out.
Oh, okay, I'm just checking. We're on page 41.
The citation?
It's used in as.
It's provided in, or more than that has to be deleted. Should have run the same meaning as provided in the last statute.
Yeah, that's ES, not AS.
Right, yeah, I realize that. You're just gonna leave it, and provide in the last statute.
That's the cross-reference back to the earlier set of definitions in the development plan. In other words, those are not, are not sections that exist until the bill is passed. Make sure you're using the same term the same way in all parts of it.
Right.
The, page 42 and 40, the 43 deal with the, split move and, do you have any language on effective date yet?
I'm not too sure about this, this is rather difficult language to determine. You could use a paragraph substantially like this. This act takes effect December 5th, 1978. If a bond issue, including all bondable cost of physical relocation of capital, has been approved by the voters of the state, or at a later date, if the bond issue is approved after December 5th, 1978. In other words, that gives two dates, the later of which controls December 5th, 1978, or the date of approval of the bond issue.
Mr. Chairman, would it be all right if you read that one more time?
Sure. Well, we can even get copies of it.
Oh, no, that's fine.
This act takes effect. Excuse me. This act takes effect December 5th, 1978. If a bond issue, including all bondable costs of physical relocation to capital, has been approved by the voters of the state, or at a later date, if the bond issue is approved after December 5th, 1978.
Mr. Chairman, I would only point out to you, if I'm correct, that the wording of that ties back to the, I believe, to the Frank Initiative.
Yes.
And those wording, as opposed to what might be a different determination. It does not tie it to, that's making, I guess, an assumption in that wording that that figure would be equal to the Frank Initiative as opposed to some other figure that might come out. Am I not correct, Mr. Berry?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that was drafted that way so that you would not have a conflict with the Frank Initiative. This is, to the best of my recollection, precisely the initiative language.
There is one major but perhaps important part. It says all bondable costs as determined by a commission established by the legislature, the capital of the House State Affairs Committee used the bondable costs that were determined by the Capital Planning Commission from a letter from Av Gross, I think February 16th of this year, determine what bondable cost could possibly mean. I think that's probably an essential part of your effective date. Bondable cost as determined by who, as defined by who. The initiative says as determined by the commission, set up by the
legislature. I really think that issue is going to be resolved in relation to the bond issues anyway. My main point is that I don't think this corporation ought to be running around doing things until there's the bond issues, whatever they may be, on the ballot are approved this November. That's my main concern. Whether we, I don't think we want to get into that debate on the, just this effective date.
I think this whole idea of a conditional enactment or an enactment that becomes effective on an external condition is something that's
it's common in legislation.
Well, except that it involves language which probably itself is going to be subject to litigation, so it might involve multiple litigation involving the same language. And I think just some if it were just made effective, then wouldn't really the impact of the bonds be obvious at all, and you know either be the trigger or the break on the functioning of the CBC. And it seems kind of like overkill if the bonds don't pass.
I'd like to get out of the bondable cost dispute, but I would like to have an approval of the bond issues, because even if the bond issues are turned down, corporations go ahead and borrow money. I think, to get it all out the table here, I think if the voters refuse the bond issues, I don't think we ought to proceed until there's some reorganization and there's a different approach, or maybe it's over. But in any case, I think we ought not to authorize them.
There's no way the CDC can function unless those bonds are approved, so it should be, the whole thing should be killed if they're not approved.
No, I mean
legally killed, it should be something.
Well, that's what we want to say that.
There's one subtlety, I think, in the Frank Initiative, and then I believe the initiative doesn't say that they have to approve of bonds. They have to approve of bondable costs, I believe is what it says.
Bond issues.
So bring you the text. A bond issue would indeed handle that, but the other way to handle it also.
I think they should say bond.
Why don't we say a bond issue to finance the capital?
I don't know, it's right here somewhere.
A bond issue for cost of physical location of the capital?
Yeah.
Deleting including all bondable costs?
Yeah.
Including all bondable and substituting for?
Mr. Chairman?
Frank Initiative says bond issue.
Mr. Kelly?
The Frank Initiative reads capital relocation expenditures. State money may be expended to relocate physically the present functions of the state government, including but not limited to the legislature, the governor's office, and all offices of the heads of the principal departments from their present location, only after a majority of those voting in a statewide election have approved a bond issue which includes all bondable costs of the relocation to the state through the year 1992, as determined by a commission created by the legislature to plan the relocation. In determining the bondable cost to the state, the commission shall also determine the total cost to the state. Those costs shall include, but not be limited to, the cost of moving personnel and offices to the relocation site, blah, blah.
We already made ours.
If you delete those three words,
Ms. Buckle.
I'd like to ask Billy why we have two effective dates. Why don't we just have one where it says if the bond measure is passed? Why have December 5th us and then have another one?
Mr. Berry.
Mr. Chairman, that date was set as a matter of policy, and I'll defer to the members who. It is not intended to refer to a bond election.
Well, the effective dates, I think we can have one effective date, just as long as there's an approval of a bond issue to finance relocation. I think that takes care of it. If the bonds are defeated in November, the corporation isn't going to the same suit that's going to be filed against the other, right?
Go ahead. Is the December 50, is that after the incoming governor?
Okay,
that's
what
it should be. Yeah.
That's where you're
Yeah.
If you leave out the December 5th date, I can make the language much simpler.
Okay. Right, I'm just going to move that language, and I don't care if the committee wants it or not. I just think it's good policy not to, at this point, engage this corporation before there's some vote on the financing.
Would be your intention then, Mr. Greening, to write that in?
Yeah, I think we're through. I was going to move those sections that the commissioners and Mr. Perkowitz didn't have a strong objection to and make a check on, but I thought I'd just get that out of the way, and then the effective date and the language dealing with planning and zoning we can take up and get this drafted into a committee substitute.
Would it be your intention to have the amendment that you intend to propose into the draft?
Right. I think we have the larger issue, of course, the bond issue, we ought to get to that, I just...
I talked to the chairman, and what I would like to do would be, you know, if you get some kind of consensus from the committee as to the changes that you wish to propose, I would suggest that if you, as much of it as you can do, it would, you know, do it in the draft and then come back to the committee. We won't take up the bond until we've gotten this package pretty well together. It's not the intention to work on the bond.
Yeah, but I think we could, I don't care if we take up the question of reporting it out tonight, but I think we can put it in final form tonight. We could even report it out for that.
I agree. What I was trying to suggest is you get as close to, you know, form ready to go as you can tonight. And whether, again, it doesn't really make that much difference whether we report it out tonight or when we have the full bill is put it. But that would be, I think that would probably be the most expeditious way to handle it.
Well, I think I got everything lined up here. I think we can just vote them up or down.
All right, Mr. Green. The floor is yours.
Starting on page 1 through 8, I move all of the amendments on page 1 through 8 found in the work draft.
You've heard the motion. Is there objection from the committee?
Okay.
Mr. Aiken?
Anyone can comment on it.
Well, if you quit, you know, I'd like to be, have my memory refreshed as we go through here, whether they were the ones that are objected to or not. Can you do that?
Yeah.
I mean, if there's no objection by anybody.
No objection by anyone.
By us.
By us.
We don't have to vote, but we just remember that.
I would like to point that out to the non-committee members. Sorry. When it comes to voting. I don't object to the committee, finance committee members asking, you know, the commission if they have objection, but on their own, I would prefer that they didn't object. Further questions or comments on the motion? Is there further objection? Hearing none, the motion is adopted. Mr. Green?
Okay, on page 9, I had a note there, line 25. Can I ask the commission, what was your comment on that line 25?
No problem.
Okay. On page 9, I'll move the deletion of the language on line 25 only.
Is there objection? There's no objection at all.
Page 10, move the deletion of the language on that page.
Is there objection?
Try this one on page 11. In lieu of the second sentence in subsection A, starting on line 9 on page 11. As follows, a general development plan only becomes effective after review and comment by the assembly of the Matanuska-Sitna Borough. Comment from the assembly must be received within 30 days of submission of the plan to the assembly.
Is there objection to the motion? You don't object. I'll object for you, Mrs. Rudd.
Are you proposing, Clark, to remove the sentence, the general development based on the initial and proposed overall?
Yeah, this is really a new section. Let's see. This sentence would go before, it's actually those two sentences that I moved, and I'll read them again, would go between capital city area and then the general development plan would go on line 9 after the first sentence.
No other changes.
No other changes.
Ms. Rudd.
Mr. Chairman, I had basically the same amendment. I was gonna propose to put it down as a new D a couple of pages later. It would say, following the completion of public hearings, I was gonna propose to reinsert the language having to do with the financing plan and the public hearings, and then a new section which would say, following the completion of public hearings, the board of directors shall adopt a general development plan, which may be approved with or without amendment from the proposed general development plan by at least 2/3 vote of the full membership of the board upon finding that the general development plan is in accordance with and furthers the purposes of this chapter. The general development plan becomes effective only after review and comment by the assembly of the Mat-Su Borough. And it seems to me that might be a more logical place for it to be, rather than up in the beginning of that section. It would be, it would follow the sections C on page 12 and be a new D.
Yeah, I have no objection, except I think we need to put a time limit in there. Some, I don't care if it's what,
yeah,
what date the time limit would pick,
that's
but
fine.
I'd like to ask, on the time limits, 30 days, 30 days may not be a reasonable time, I don't know, to review a plan.
Chairman, time limit is good, and I think 30 might make the move, but, you know, I think that's appropriate. 60 days is the amount of time that, of course, state statutes, there's a condition having to do with plats. That calls for quite a bit of bureaucratic review. If there's going to be a real review by the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then they recommend to the Assembly, 30 days may be somewhat short, but I don't think you want to unnecessarily lengthen that. Might take a moderate approach and say 45 days. No, seriously, 30 days would be pretty short if you had to go through P&Z any kind of review.
I think
60.
Yeah, amend my motion then to really incorporate Mrs. Rudd's motion with the addition of comment from the assembly must be within 60 days from submission of the plan to the assembly.
Mr. Meekins?
Yeah, for the question, are you now not going to have it placed on line 9 on page 11, Clark? But
no.
Is that still in effect of your motion?
Yeah.
Yes.
I really don't have any great desire.
It won't be down here. Okay.
We have a limit. D, you mean D on the next page?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Chairman, the thing is that she's putting back in some sections, Clark, and you were just adding that extra line.
That's fine. Fix it. Google motion.
Do you understand your motion, Mr.
Chairman? I do. Do the people that are taking notes here understand?
No, I lost, Mr. Chairman.
I'll have to get the wording. Do you have that? I understand the purport, but I don't have the exact wording.
I have it here. Yeah.
And I understand the placement, the precise wording. I don't.
Mr. Rudd, could you provide? Do you have it written down?
We got it.
You got it. All right.
We'll take a look.
All right. Page. Okay, is there further discussion? Mr. Meekins, do you have something further? Yeah. Ms. Rudd?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for your indulgence. I had originally proposed an amendment on the same page. Speaking to amendments to the General Development Plan, I notice on page 13, the proposal is to delete all of Section E, which talks about amendments to the General Development Plan. The language I was originally going to propose was that the amendments to the general development plan may be made by the borough assembly of the Mat-Su Borough, but I'm now interested in the idea that amendments could be proposed by the assembly of the Mat-Su Borough, so that you're putting into statute an avenue for them to get into the CDC for a hearing on an issue of concern to them. I suppose, in fact, they could go to the CDC at any time and ask for a hearing, but I think it might be desirable to put in statute some kind of avenue of access to the CDC for the borough assembly. So that I would propose possibly language to the effect that amendments to the general development plan may be proposed by the assembly of the Mat-Su borough.
Maybe we ought to get to that. Was there any objection to that last amendment? Did anyone understand?
I had a hard time every time I tried to get it, find out what was an objection, they kept adding to it.
I know, could I get this clarified? Your initial amendment on page is still there. And page 11 is still there, Clark, and then this amendment on page 12 is also there. So are you combining those two?
My proposal on page 12 is not to remove that language. Any of the language on page 12, but to add in section D the language that you wanted with the addition of my requirement that they do so with.
You're leaving out.
What about page 11, line?
That would stay as in the original state affairs where you still have the corporation preparing the general development plan.
No amendment.
No amendment.
All right, does everybody understand the proposed amendment? Is there further discussion, further objection? Hearing none, motion is adopted. Green?
Okay. Now I want to, maybe Lisa has some, I'm not going to move any changes on page 13 unless you have a change for your amendment.
Well, in that case, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest adding to the language on amendments a new sentence beginning, we're talking about page 13, line 8, this section that talks about amendments to the general development plan. I would add a sentence, I suppose, at the end of that, just saying amendments to the general development plan may be proposed by the borough assembly of the Mat-Su borough. I think you got the word. May be proposed by the assembly of the Mat-Su borough. Mr. Berry, when you drafted this, you had maybe proposed, or maybe made by the assembly, by ordinance. Do you think that term is desirable, that it be by ordinance?
Mr. Chairman, we were functioning there with the plan having been approved by ordinance. The language you have assumes that the plan had, it relates back to the earlier language.
Right.
That earlier language no longer exists, so the need for ordinance no longer exists, unless you feel there should be a hearing.
Mr. Meekin?
Chairman, I move the amendment suggested by Mrs. Rudd.
Is there objection? Hearing none, it's ordered. Mr. Green?
Yeah, I missed one on page 5. Let me just go back once. On page 5. Lines 8. That provision provides for the waiver of Alaska Hire. I move following, we put a period after AS 3610.010 and delete the rest of the language in subsection 8.
You move, Mr.
Yes, I move and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Mr. Meekin?
Are we sure that's Alaska Hire, that site?
I have a note on my copy that says something with an arrow to that saying no bidding. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering whether that's the bidding provisions rather than Alaska Hire.
We're checking that.
It's
the Alaska bidding procedures. It's a local hire for Alaska. Contract.
Oh, you mean the 5%
preference?
Yeah.
This is the quote famous Alaska Hire statute.
Bidder's preference.
What? Bidder's preference?
Preference?
Women.
Yeah.
Well,
that's your bidder preference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 5%.
That's
wrong.
I'll let
you move it.
We almost
did away
with you.
Boy, that's.
No, I'm kidding.
That's one more change we're up in this year.
This is what required. You hired 95% residents. Awesome.
Are we agreed as to what the meeting?
It's Alaska Hire, not Big.
Would you explain to Mr. Meekins so that everybody understands exactly what we're talking about here? If you're going to make a motion or you're not?
Well, am I supposed to get it explained to me or am I supposed to explain it to you?
We'll let you know after you try.
I thought it was bidder's preference, which is a different thing.
All right.
It's Alaska Hire, so I'm in concurrence with what we just did. I'm in harmony, basically, with what this committee is doing.
Okay, we did.
Can you see me resident in harmony?
We did adopt that, did we not?
Yeah, if anyone's interested with that provision, provides exactly. Okay, next amendments on, I moved the changes on page 15.
Are they self-evident, Mr. Green?
There's one additional one that doesn't appear on the marked up copy here, and that's on subsection C. It says, in addition to the agreement authorized by AS 29. That's one that I guess the state affairs has taken out and didn't get put into the committee substitute. Is that right?
I'm sorry, Clark, I wasn't.
On page 15, line 15.
Yeah.
Mr. Meekins?
Could you specify what you're talking about? I read this language, but what do you mean by left out?
Okay. In addition to the changes that are made on your. Are you looking at the marked up copy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That statute citation that's a part of the statute that was proposed in the state affairs version. It was taken out, so there's no point in putting it in.
Mr. Green, you want it?
I've moved that.
No.
Okay, you say that.
All right, is there any objection to the motion? Getting this to order, Mr. Green?
Page 17. I'll remove I moved the deletion of section 160 there, which is the eminent domain power.
Is there objection?
Objection.
Did I hear an objection?
Yeah.
Mr. Meekin?
I just want to think. Well, what's the alternative? I mean, Justifying May was that they didn't care if the CDC had the eminent domain as long as somebody did, and is that your position on that?
That's a correct statement. My understanding is that in order to get access to the Susitna, it may be necessary to connect somewhere.
Mr. Chairman? Well, Clark, I'm wondering if there's I think I'm following what you're trying to do here, but I'm wondering if you have some other language to replace it with or something else in mind.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I believe that existing eminent domain powers would be sufficient. I think that the CDC, together with the agency, whether it be highways or Department of Transportation or whatever, would have the power to condemn here. But I really am hesitant about giving this corporation, which has a little bit more independence than some of the line agencies, the power of eminent domain, even though it's still subject to provisions of normal condemnation actions, but they can, by declaration of taking, tell a guy to get off his land. And although it's for a public purpose, it's hard enough on a guy when the highway department tells him you're going to do it.
Mr. Meekins, and then.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with that. I'm just concerned of whether or not they would have any other way of doing it. I wonder if I could ask the commission to repeat that.
All right.
Do you have a suggestion that would help me out here?
I think if the statute expressly provided that the CDC could request the state to condemn and the state would then proceed to condemn for them, I believe it would be constitutional. And I think would address your problem, that is have somebody other than the CDC reviewing the propriety of this act of condemnation. Somewhere around line 10, I think, is where you could insert helpful language. May request that the state acquire the property or something like that.
Mr. Bumble?
Mr. Chairman, isn't it initially that they will need this kind of power because they won't really have any access to the land the way that if they have a municipality, local government established? This take the place of a municipal government at the initial portion of the capital. So they would have, they probably would be necessary for them to assume some powers, wouldn't it?
If I could, the way I see it, except for the small inholdings of private land within the capital site, there's no problem. And the way the development plan is such that I don't think we have to acquire any of that private land. The problem that we can foresee right now would be getting the sewer outfall to the Susitna River. That's the major one. The highway department, the proposed new bypass, the state would, the way we are proposing it, would construct it, and they already have power of eminent domain. The broader question of whether some of the airport at Arizona might extend outside, there are a number of ways where you might impact, but the main one I think comes in the sewer, and that's going from the on-site facility to the river, and also the possibility that we'll have to bring water from some source that is off-site.
But Mr. Chairman, this is something necessary for, because the state already has the power, understand?
Well, that is our question, that we're not sure about that, since it would be the state, or would be, say, the CDC would be a different agency. That's the question that Mr. Berkowitz has raised.
It strikes me that inserting those few words and then probably eliminating the last sentence, since if the state's doing the condemning, the state has quick take power. Really address the issue.
I think they'd have the power under existing powers within this bill to enter into agreements with the appropriate state agency or the borough in case it arrives, but I think more often than not it would be a state agency.
Mr. Meekin?
Well, I have suggested an amendment to that motion, and that would be to incorporate the suggested language and delete the language on line 12 starting with the corporation.
You offer that as an amendment, Mr. Chairman?
I do.
I don't understand.
I object. Would you explain it?
Yeah, well, essentially the language would be then the same, but you'd put the section in, and the language on line 10 would be, you would strike out, acquire the, yeah, the language?
Yeah.
Why don't you do it, too?
I would add after the word may and before the word acquire on line 10, additional language so that it would read, the corporation may request that the state, on behalf of the corporation, acquire the property in any lawful manner, including the exercise of the power of eminent domain, etc.
Does everyone understand Mr. Greenberg?
Can I have that read one?
Yeah, after the word may, I would
on
add.
On what line?
On line 10. So the first word in the line, may request that the state, comma, on behalf of the corporation, comma, acquire the property.
And do we leave the last?
And then delete the following sentence.
Okay,
good. Everyone understand the proposed amendment to the amendment? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the amendment to the amendment is.
I'll move the main amendment.
Main amendment, the question on main amendment, is there an objection to the main motion? Hearing none, it's yours. Mr. Greening.
Okay. Page. I move the change on page 18.
Is there objection? Would you restate the motion, Mr. Greening, please?
I move the omission and the work draft on page 18.
Is there objection? Hearing none, it's ordered.
Amendments on pages 20 through 31.
You're not going to touch 19.
No, I think we've covered that with effect.
20 through 31.
There a barrier?
Which?
Confer here with Mr. Greening.
Mr. Greening, I think you want to take out and subject to any due with no holders or bondholders on line 23.
Okay.
On page 93.
Right, right. I'll make these changes actually. Just the one on page 19, I'll move the deletion of and subject to any agreement with note holders or bondholders.
Is that in addition to the other motion, Mr. Green?
Yes.
Is there objection? Mr. Regan?
Object to clarification. We have this one. And the deletion of pages of 20 to 31, but would it just be to line 10 on 31?
On 31?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought you should go to page 33, is what I thought you might want to do. What I'm getting at.
Actually, yeah, you're right.
Line 15, page 3.
The motion, I'll restate the motion. The motion is to move all the changes on pages 20 to 33, including the deletion on page 19.
Is there objection?
Page 34, I'll move the language that appears on your work draft plus the words bond or on line 22 in lieu of the word completed on line 29, substantially implemented.
You heard the motion?
I didn't, Mr.
Chairman.
I was sneezing. Could you?
Okay, I'm moving all the language on page 24 plus the addition of the amended language. Page 34, I'm sorry. Plus the words, the deletion of the words bond or on line 22 and in lieu of the word completed on line 29, substantially implemented. I'm not going to state it.
Mr. Meeker?
What was the commission's commissioner's testimony on that?
On page, Mr. Chairman, on page 34, I believe we agreed with all of those changes and with the one additional one of the
I move my objection.
How about line 29? Mr. Chairman, the one that Lisa had,
yeah.
Is there further objection? Hearing none, Mr. Ward.
Move the language on page 35.
Heard the motion of the objection. Bring your objection to order.
page 36. Move the deletion of the definitions in subsections 10 and 11.
Is there objection? Do you have an objection to the word? Greening Mrs. Rudd had a query or direction, I think, when you were busy. Ms. Rudd, would you care to repeat the question, please?
Well, I just asked about the numbers on page 35, the first two lines, and I had understood they had been adopted. The substitution of 10,000 for whatever that original number was in the year 1988, is it?
Yeah.
That's been adopted.
Yeah, it has, but we may come back to it. I just want to get through these, and if somebody else has motions. I move the amendment appearing on page 37.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered.
Page 39. You want to move it?
Well, I don't have the power to move it, but I'll read it to you.
Oh, okay. Is this in lieu of the whole section there?
Yeah. That's what I would suggest.
Mr. Green?
On page 39, in lieu of the language appearing on lines 22 through 29 and then on line 1 on page 40, the following language. The general development plan and the specific development plans constitute the land use plan for the capital city area. When a parcel of land has been developed in accordance with the applicable specific development plan, that parcel becomes subject to all planning, zoning, subdivision, building code, or other similar ordinance of the Matt Nusis, the Sydney Borough.
Did you move it?
Yeah, I move it.
Is there objection?
Object.
Mr. Meekins?
I would like to, I hate to do it, but could I hear that one more time? Because there's something in there that seemed, I wondered if it should be the borough or the what role
would you read it to the road again, please?
The general development plan and specific development plans constitute the land use plan for the capital city area, period. When a parcel of land has been developed in accordance with the applicable specific development plan, that parcel becomes subject to all planning, zoning, subdivision, building code, or other similar ordinances of the Matsu Borough.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I guess the only question that went through my mind under service areas, I can see where the city is going to be doing certain things that the area, the rest of the borough isn't. There's no conflict there, is there, that because the service area, the municipal the borough would contract with the city to provide that service, so it could in sense be given back then to the municipality. You see what I'm getting to, Lisa?
Yeah, I do. You raised a question in my mind. For instance, building codes, maybe Bill can answer this, or you certainly put it on us to do this. The borough has planning and zoning power, but do building codes fall under that, or would that be a municipal power? Under a first-class city, that's maybe it needs to be changed so that certain powers fall to the city and certain powers go to the borough at that point.
The building code power, building code enforcement is a part of the planning and zoning power of the borough. I will absolutely verify that, and it's not distributed to the city, but it's fairly late. But unless my recollection is very bad, that's part of the area-wide planning and zoning power.
Mr. Chairman, the question would be, though, can that could be contracted back to the municipality without problem and to work as a service area?
Chairman, the basic decision was made that as far as the relation between the borough and city on planning and zoning, that was a state affairs decision. The existing law would be followed, and I wouldn't attempt to set up in this bill specific different relations than other areas.
I remove my objection.
Is there further objection? Hearing none, Mr. Ward.
Okay, on page 42, and on page 43 through line 24, I move the deletion of those lines.
Is there objection? Hearing none, Mr. Ward.
Wait a minute, Joe.
All right.
It's a split move. It takes a split move out. And I think you were...
Object.
Okay.
All right.
Let me explain.
We'll start over. Mr. Meekins object. Mr. Green?
Okay. What happened to page 41, by the way?
I didn't move anything there.
So you say.
That's where I was on the site.
All right.
Okay, the split move question is really to be debated and resolved on the question of bonds, both here and here on the floor. I don't see any reason to inject this issue into this particular this time, so we can go on to the question of the bonds. That's the reason I can understand if you believe in this concept, you want to argue it, but I'm not arguing it one way or the other. I think at this point, probably better to bring up that issue within the context of the bond.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meek. Yeah, I'd like to ask Mr. Kelly if he would be willing to say what he felt the State Affairs Committee was getting at by putting it here, and if there's some reason, what he thinks about that.
Mr. Kelly, do you wish to respond?
Yeah, originally we started off with the same idea that Clark had, to keep this particular authorization bill free of any, as much as possible, any controversial anti-move, pro-move section. We felt, though, when we developed the basic compact capital, we felt that we had to lock it in legislatively. And the reason we felt that was that one of the arguments that is used against the split move is that it gives Juneau no security. And so we attempted to give Juneau at least a modicum of security by locking it in legislatively. Now, you know, it'd be great if it could be a constitutional amendment. Unfortunately, the best we could do would be put it in legislatively, and it would take, you know, an act of another legislature to change it. And we felt that Juneau would always be strong enough, and Juneau's allies, and even Anchorage legislators. I myself would be committed in the future to maintaining that level of state central employee in Juneau. So that's why we put it in there. We didn't want to. We couldn't think of another way to lock it in legislatively. I would like to add one other thing. That it's not my intention to debate the split move concept in this committee, and I'll save my arguments for the floor. And when we get to that part, I'm just here as an interested observer. And I won't, you know, what you do is what you do. I won't say anything.
Mr. Meekins.
Mr. Chairman, I maintain my objection.
You maintain your objection.
Call for the question. The
question been called for. All those in favor of the motion, signify by raising your right hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those opposed? 2. Motion carries. Mr. Kelly, I didn't count you, so.
Okay, the last amendment here, for the effective date, in lieu of the one that appears on page 43, it'll read, this act takes effect 30 days after certification that a bond issue for costs of relocation of the capital has been adopted by the voters of the state.
Is there objection to the motion, Mr. Meekins?
I'm wondering if, I'm still confused as to how that leaves us with the Frank Initiative Park. What do you think of that? I mean, what, do we need to address it, or?
Well, I purposely left that question out, just to avoid debate of what the main point was that the, whatever bond package ultimately appears, that it be approved before this corporation runs out and does it. I think the larger question would be either involved in lawsuits, if, let's say, if the bond issues pass and they're not what's deemed bondable costs, it's going to be a number of suits which will involve everything, every aspect of it.
If I may inquire, do you provide 30 days after certification? Or should say upon certification?
Yeah, 30 days after certification, which is usually 30 days after the voter. It depends. Certification takes place whenever the lieutenant governor thinks the votes have been counted properly, doesn't it?
Very true.
I don't specifically recall. I know typically things take place 30 days after certification, presumably due to a law challenge. I'm not sure of when certification takes place.
Well, it's the act of Lieutenant Governor.
Exactly.
Title 15.
Mr. Meekins and then Mr. Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just like to hear from the commissioners on this point. I can see what Clark's getting at. I don't know if I see all the ramifications. I'd like you to.
Mr. Chairman, just one thing, your thought, you'll have to understand that we're having a lot of ideas here and we're trying to keep in mind the whole thing. One area of concern. If you do, whether you put the 30 days or whether you make it effective as of the date of the election, I don't think that's important to my concern. And that is there anything that's needed in this legislation to, say, allow the capital site planning commission to continue on with the various environmental studies? Is that just a question of funding? Are there ramifications that we're not thinking about if we put this hold off on putting this into effect? And I don't know the answer to that, Representative Green.
Well, I think the environmental studies can be done by the planning commission. We haven't got into fiscal note on those things.
No.
Fiscal note carry those environmental statements. I don't think so. That's a separate bill, I agree with.
Mr. Chairman, the only problem on that, and it may be more imagined than real, the legislation that set up the Capital Planning Commission really ended with the preparation of the development plan and so on. The legislation, and we were funded, of course, through the end of the year, but we're created for a four-year period of time, but we're really not given a charge. And I'm just wondering, in this interim period there, if you wouldn't, there wouldn't need to be some provision made to say that you could carry on and do something. Is that valid, Mr. Barrier, possibly, or someone? We had specific tasks to appoint, and I don't know that we have those going on to carry on.
I seem to be missing some facts that everybody else apparently has. There is a.
Okay.
You're talking about some kind of ongoing thing that's going, and
right.
I'm not sure what you're
okay.
talking
Between
about.
Between July 1 and the date of the election, or whatever date you amend in here, there should be, we feel, environmental studies carried on. Will, if this doesn't go, the CDC does not become effective until after the bonding. Can the Capital Site Planning Commission carry forward and do additional duties?
I recall, the appropriation that we acted on earlier in this session was to the Capitol Site Planning Commission, not...
Pardon?
The appropriation we acted on earlier in this session for your environmental studies was to the Capitol Site Planning Commission. So it must have been assumed that they were going to do the work.
Mr. Chairman, though that was for the supplemental, and it stayed within this particular fiscal year.
I had environmental studies in there for a tremendous, what was the amount, 900,000 or something like that in environmental studies?
Mr. O.
Mr. Chairman, I have...
Just this year.
Researched this briefly.
Just this
year. The director of legislative finance. The committee could proceed in two ways. The Capital Planning Commission, Site Commission, has submitted revised numbers as to what it's going to take to include the environmental, water table, seismic studies, and related office expenses. And that could be done by way of an appropriations bill, or it can be placed inside the capital budget. But those numbers still have to be worked out.
Mr. Chairman, we have those numbers, but it's not necessary to have change in the legislation. That's my only question.
Authorization, more than...
Well, there is no expiration. When do you... Is there
1981.
Well, what's the problem then? It's just a question.
Money.
Question of funding.
Money. Yeah, but this is an appropriation bill, so it has to be taken care of either the appropriation bill that's in Senate Finance or some other bill or the capital budget.
It's nowhere, incidentally. That's just through fiscal year. There's nothing in the new budget.
Yeah, but I don't think that means you're not going to be.
Well, once you commit the money, it's obligated. So it carries on beyond this year.
Yeah, I guess you get 900,000.
You have the floor next year. Or you yield.
I think I'm going to talk.
I give up.
Commissioner Ross, sir.
Thank you.
All right, where are we? Mr. Weed. I have a motion on the floor. Mr. Meekins objects. And Mr. Meekins has maintained his objection. Call the question. All those in favor of the motion signify by raising your right hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? 1, 2. Motion carried. Mr. Green?
I'm done.
Further amendments to be proposed? Mr. Duncan, did you have a proposed amendment? Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Buckholz.
What happened to the dates and population figure on page 35?
They were adopted.
They were adopted.
1,000 and 1988.
Are there further proposed amendments to the bill? Mr. Green, do you... I think you have the amendments in order that you move to report the bill out, or would you rather wait to see what it looks like printed, or?
Well, here, Mr. Chairman, I think what I'd like to do now, before I make the motion, is to report out a Finance Committee substitute incorporating these changes and have signature await upon review by the members tomorrow morning of the draft.
Tomorrow morning.
I told you that's impossible.
Mr. Green,
good all summer, Bill.
Mr. Green, we want the Finance Committee will not be meeting in the morning anyhow, because we have a caucus on capital budget,
right,
and so. All right, Ms. Buckholz.
Well, we have the draft by noon tomorrow.
1:15. Most of it's just ripping pages out rather than.
There's quite a backlog, and I won't guarantee it. For any particular time. And I'm not going to stay over tonight.
I really didn't think about that. I wasn't asking.
That's okay. We won't be out of session back in the
morning. Well, maybe sometime tomorrow afternoon. So
I'll get it as soon as I can. I keep promise.
Yeah. Report out a Finance Committee substitute incorporating the amendments made.
Is there objection? Hearing none is so ordered. I will hold the signing out the report until such time as we can have the bill, the last bill before us. And we're not, no intention to go ahead on the bond bill tonight, so. We'll meet at the call of the chair, which would be no sooner than tomorrow.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Jim,
for information, did you plan to take up the bond bill tomorrow?
Yes.
Well, the bond bill has already been announced, and I would assume that the chairman will pursue that as soon as this time.
I'm going to work for the homestead, y'all.
Oh, I know what you're going to do.
Okay. Is anybody here before we start? Is anybody here on House Bill 969? I guess not.
Okay.
It's a multi-purpose appropriations number. Okay, let's start on 965. Jim? We're ready to go.
What's the number?
965. It'd be 965, Jim, but.
Yeah, what? Back election. My kids are coming.
That is 965.
Where are you telling me that? Down here? Oh, yeah. It's going to burn on the other side. Okay, Ron is here, and since how we'd like to wait until Chuck Belkey and Arliss get here, I'd like to pick up 969, which is a result of the Budget and Audit Committee decision.
Ooh. what it is the appropriation of the federal funds and the non-state funding requests in FY 78. So there's no general funds involved.
What was the number, please?
969. Ron, you want to give us just a general rundown of what this is, and maybe you can just peel off the present numbers and we can run it through.
Basically, what these are things that would have been processed by revised program during this year. So what I have is, I do have a list that has all of the total amounts. And I think also Jim Hogan has the original bill plus a list of each one of the adjustments that he submitted. It simply could just be placed into the changes should be made in the original bill. I don't have a summary of that right here before me.
I've got your budget amendment, or rather your letter of May 23rd. Is that still current? You got other?
Now there's one laying over on my desk.
That's current on that. Give that to the Senate.
What has to be done is take the original bill and add on the three amendments. I think there's one on the 5th, the 12th, and the 23rd.
Okay.
The way the amendments are set up, they only speak about those items that are being changed, not all the items that are in the basis. So we have the original bill, and each amendment only talks about those few items that are being adjusted. The other thing we tried to do in this bill is, just as we would have in revised program, is ask for approval to continue both portions of the federal funds in the next state fiscal year the federal government has given approval for. We've done that by the placement of an asterisk next to the item to continue forward.
Okay. Okay, do people understand what we've got now? We're sitting as a budget and audit committee, sort of, and it receives the same kind of attention that does the budget and audit committee. I would suppose the motion would be in order now, but are there questions with respect to no
maybe
I used to be on that.
Maybe just an explanation here of an example.
Mr. Rowe.
On not numbers. Well, starting with this one we just handed, 1, 2, 3, 4. It says Department of Fish and Game Support Fishery Investigation Research, $22,500, got an asterisk. Over in the total, $20,500 has an asterisk amount of this amendment, 36. Is this general fund?
No, so there's no state money involved in any of these. These are all, in effect, grants and contracts with the federal government. They're telling us, for these particular projects, we're going to pay you this much money. So there's no state money involved in this at all.
Okay.
Where did the amendments go? Did you mention amendments
to the bill? Okay, yes,
there are three letters. One dated May 23rd, May 12th, and May 5th.
23rd? Oh, okay.
12th and 5th.
All right.
I would move that we report the bill out. Ask unanimous consent.
Okay. I can't hear that. There is a motion that we report out. That would be committee substitute for House Bill 969, which would incorporate the omnibus supplemental bill amendments as attached to Mr. Lynn's letter of May 23rd, 1978. is objection to the motion. If there's no objection, the motion carries. This is the letter. Put my remark. The members, you got two handouts here, and Jim's going to explain what they are, so that we can go so we can refer to them.
Mr. Chairman, the members have been given three items. First is the summary of the information obtained for the committee about inflation rates at your request, and some of the material was passed out earlier when the found folders were given to the members. And the Capital Planning Commission has prepared two estimates of quote bondable costs in line with the Attorney General's opinion. And they were prepared on the same basis as the cost for the split move for the State Affairs Committees. The assumptions being the same, but for two different inflation rates, 8% and 9.5%, 9.5% being the number indicated by the data from the Department of Highways, by Blanchard and Company, and by the Anchorage cost analysis that were reported to this committee. And Mr. Belkey is the one who can explain the detail.
Okay.
Hard to hear you.
It's a long way down the table.
As Jim has pointed out, we have made our best attempts to define the bondables according to the Attorney General's ruling. We're not lawyers, so indeed there's possibilities for error here, but we think we're pretty close. Jim asked that we have an 8% plan through 1994 and a 9.5% inflationary plan through 1994. We've worked with American Cities Corporation in an attempt to get all of the implications laid out here. I think that if you focus attention on the 8% plan, which it's where we began, this is where the Capital Planning Commission began, when it considered those things which we felt were normally bondable, not all bondables, but the things which were normally bondable, and this was our $966 million plan. That was at an 8% inflation rate, 6% payment on general obligation bonds, but 8%. Since we
we made that, Jim requested that we make up this one, this financial plan for all bondables, and try to follow through the implications of having general obligation bonds cover all bondables. If you compare this 8% thing that you have here with the 8% holdout sheet which you had in this book here, you'll find that the bondables are a little more than $500 million higher than what we had considered would normally be bonded. So the difference between bonded by our original plan and bondables by this plan is about a little in excess of $500 million.
I think it's important just to note on that, because there's very much of a distinction there, that the way that our proposed financial plan is developed, we handled the bonding and the payment, the financing in a certain way. We have not incorporated in any part of our financial plan the Attorney General's quote bondables. So there is a very large distinction.
Yes.
Right. And the one other distinction, and I think it's important on the part, because we relied on American Cities computers and so on, that we did nothing to change assumptions. We didn't bring in the same kind of logic, marketing, etc., to develop this particular quote bondable package. And so it does not have that same basis of planning that does the financial plan that was given to you.
What happened here was several things that were going to be done either by federal government, say private enterprise, I don't recall, I think private enterprise, I know private enterprise, capital development corporation and so on. These things were moved into the bondable category and taken out of some general fund areas and simply taken out of some areas that we're not going to rattle into the state at all, such as the federal government's implications. Now the federal government's implications are in here. Anyhow, these bondables are almost exactly $1.5 billion.
Compared to
900 and, well, really $930 million, because we have found that we could get the state off the hook for the cogeneration plan. We left that out here. This has a profound effect on the loans to the Development Corporation, if indeed this plan were followed. I would suggest that we only focus attention on the state bonds and leave the general fund as it was before, because I'm afraid we're going to get into troubles if we don't do that. Mm-hmm. And the major thing that I think you have to look at, though, is that the state bonds have increased dramatically. The interest increases because we're bonding more. And you can simply say that anything that has changed from a general fund item or a somebody else does a fund item to a bondable item increases by 63% if it's a 6% bond. Because you now have the debt service, you have to have the interest on top of the bond itself, so that's increased. Therefore, the debt service on state bonds has gone up considerably. The interest beyond 1997, if you look down the right-hand corner of this sheet here, I've written in there, that the interest remaining to be paid on bonds outstanding is approximately equal to $470 million.
Okay.
Before that, that number was $306 million. I think these are we haven't made any changes in general indemnification. I think those are the major changes. There just have to be some things that were taken out of down below and put up. And the interest has been added. I think this is basically what's happened. Now that plan is for 8%. Jim asked that do a 9.5% plan, and we have one made. This other one that you have in the upper right hand corner says New Capital City 9.5% inflation. New numbers there. And the bondables under that scheme are $1,726 million. The debt service is $974 million, and the interest beyond 1994 is $573.3 million. And the formats now for both the 8 and the 9.5% are exactly the same. The only thing that changes is the inflation rate.
Ms. Buckholz.
What was the basis for the inflation?
The 8% initially. The commission had to select an inflation rate. And we had some considerable discussions in our commission. This is one of the places where we really cross swords. And it was suggested by our consultants that probably a 7% inflation rate was the most realistic one. We hammered that back and forth, and by a majority vote, not a unanimous vote, by a majority vote, we decided to select 7%. Some of us were concerned that, I'm sorry, we decided 80%. Some of us felt that we hadn't seen 7% in some time and we were not too comfortable with it. So we selected 8%. I'd have to say that I was one of the ones who was not all that comfortable with 8% at the time we did it. But since that time, we've gotten some additional information, some of it which was provided by the legislative budget group down the hall in that Blatchford report, and some which we've received in letter from, by letters from two Anchorage bankers, who indicate that probably we're not in very bad shape there. Now, the Anchorage bankers, I would want you to know, have talked about cost escalation in Anchorage and haven't specifically addressed construction cost escalation. What the difference between construction cost escalation and cost of living in Anchorage would be, I just don't know. But the Blatchford information, or the information which came out with the Blatchford report, indicated that over the first 8 years of the 70s, from zero 1970 through the end of 1977, some construction cost indices in Anchorage had gone up an average of 9.1% for that 8 year span. And included in that 8 year span was 4 years of OPEC problems and pipeline problems, which took the average up. So I feel pretty comfortable with the 8% at this point. I feel more comfortable than I did 2 months ago.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I would like to submit letters for the record and copy of the members. One from Robert Richards, who's Executive Vice President with Alaska Pacific Bank and also their economist, and Bill Hall from the National Bank of Alaska, also an economist and Senior Vice President, and I think they will touch on this subject. I think it would be of interest.
Mr. Chairman,
then
what happened to these, the inflation rate has gone up 1.5%.
I'm sorry.
Your inflation rate, your 8% has gone up to 9.5%.
No, let's be cautious here. The commission recommends 8%. Jim asked, since he detected there was some question here in your committee about higher inflation rates, he asked that I run one out at 9.5. He also asked one for 10, but I just didn't have time to do it. But he suggested that we run one out for 9.5%, and we did. We're not suggesting 9.5% for you. This was, he asked us to do it, and we did.
Mr. Green. I'm still looking at the 8% runout. Why are the additional figures there? What were your original projections based on 8% or on 6%?
No. The original projections were based on, first of all, no furniture for the state office buildings or for the municipality. Okay. Also, we did not have state grant bonds for municipality, state grant bonds for development, and so on. There were a number of things here that were determined by the Attorney General were bondable. So those were in this thing here, pushed into the bonded category.
I can't read this figure. It's what,
58 million. I found a 58 million bust in it.
That's furniture? Is that what we're
talking? No, that was bits and pieces. That was something else.
I'm just looking at this total thing under state bonds.
Okay, total state bonds, the printout is $1,440,000,000. There was an item that was left out, which I had to add later, and that brings this up to $1,498,000.
Okay, what was that item you forgot to add now?
That in this was the federal implications.
Okay, what, out of that 1,498,000, what, 1,498,000,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, just a few zeros off. What are you recommending be handled by state bonds now? What, how's that changed?
We would recommend, at least our plan in here,
yeah,
recommends $966 million. We think we can cut $38 million off that, but what's printed here is $966 million.
Any of this addition between 140 and 1,498, is that additions to that 966 figure or not?
Additions to it?
You've added to the total amount of state bonds here. Potentially bondable,
yeah,
costs here. How much of that, if any, is added to that 966 figure?
It's just the difference between the two. That's the difference between.
So what is the figure now you're recommending in terms of ballot proposition?
Well, I have problems responding to that question. Let's say within the context of the Attorney General's ruling, to the best of my knowledge, the $1,498,000,000 would handle the Attorney General's ruling.
Okay, well, your former recommendation was $966
right.
million.
Yeah.
What is it today in regard to that figure? What should be put on the ballot? Are you changing, is your position changed now? That
our position hasn't changed at all. It's the Attorney General's ruling that we're trying to respond to here. We were asked to make, in both the House State Affairs Committee and for this committee, we were asked to make up a plan which would include all bondable, you see. And we responded to that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rooney, the financial plan and the way that we still feel as a commission that this could be developed and would most logically be developed would be based on not the total bondable, but on the total amount we recommend to bond would be the $966 million as adjusted by a difference of a figure on a cogeneration plant, which would bring it down to $938 million. That is the financial plan as recommended by the commission, and it is still our position.
Okay, that's what I was driving at.
Right.
Thank you.
Mr. Swanson.
When you were here before, we had some charts on the board there.
Yes, sir.
And one of those charts called for 900, I think the figures you're using now, the 966 million. The other one on the just opposite on there called for 862 million funds that you're going to use on some kind of an unpopular preparation, loaning, or out of the general fund. What was the other chart? What was the base figure on the other one? 862 million?
There were several components.
Just trying to compare the two.
Okay. One would have been the bondable cost, the
966.
Okay. Then there was the development corporation dollars that would be on loan from the state government and repaid. They showed an attractive net return to the state in 1994 of $117 million. And you realize that whenever we use these figures, there are certain things that go on from that period of 1994, but that's the date. The other issue was the implication on the general fund. And I believe that figure netted out at $1,362 million. Well, less the there was a return.
There's a bond amortization of $288 million in that time span, so the real net there is.
All right, so we have three issues then. One would be the bondable cost, two, the loans for the development corporation, the building of roads, and the sale of land would all go into that. And third would be the implication from the general fund. And we could give you in specifics the, you know, each year what the impact would be.
I was just in
fine, thank you.
More interested in just those figures that I tried to place them
fine,
in my mind that was on the board up here, those costs.
These costs, this 1994 plan, to review a little
to handle the movement of all state central employees from Juneau and from Anchorage and a little handful from Fairbanks to the Capitol site. And this includes the growth of those employees. In number today, those are about 3,100 or 3,200 employees. And this Capitol, the 1994 Capitol, would accommodate 8,600 central state employees. We have assumed that, for better or for worse, we have assumed that state central employment would grow at the rate of 6% per annum.
Ms. Buckle.
Is the growth anticipation included in this, your estimates?
Yes.
I don't really agree with that because I don't believe that you should. It will come in time, I'm sure, even if the Capitol State in Juneau as well as if it were in Willow, but why is it necessary to include the growth factor?
We were really directed by the legislation which established the commission to do that.
I know we are. We directed you to estimate, but I just wondered if I should. I just can't agree with you.
The split move plan, the basic move plan of Tim Kelly's is one which attempts to back away from that, to move 3,200 people to Willow and end up with 8,600. There are various other alternatives. Right now, we couldn't run out of all of them.
We still have a choice, though, Mr. Chairman, don't we? Whether we want to, it's not mandatory in the statute.